I'm Joe Bud Oslo. This is TheBuildPod.com. The Week in Georgia, in English, coming to you from high atop central Oslo train station in lovely Norway. Today is Thursday, the 20th of July, 2017. On this date in 1402, Tamerlane, or as he was known in Georgia, Timur, defeats the forces of the Ottoman Empire, Sultan Bayezid I, at the Battle of Ankara. 1881, Sioux Chief Sitting Bull surrenders to U.S. federal troops. 1932, World War I veterans known as the Bonus Army attempt to force their way into the White House. 1954, the Indochina Armistice was signed, dividing Vietnam. 1969, Neil Armstrong sets foot on the moon. Birthdays are Alexander the Great in 365 BC and Sandra Oh in 1971. I'm your host, Mark Mullen. This podcast is written by Robin Bortner. If you'd like to comment on the forum or ask a question, go to TheBuildPod.com or send us an email at TheBuildPod@gmail.com. The 14th of July, far-right nationalists held a controversial protest they called the March of Georgians along Tbilisi's newly renovated Davidag Mashinabeli Street, or as it used to be known, Plekhanovi, waving flags, parading religious icons, and holding up red flares. An estimated 2,000 individuals attended, almost exclusively men. They said the main target of their protests were illegal immigration, especially from Muslim countries. They specifically called for the closure of Arab and Iranian nightclubs due to their alleged links with drug trafficking and prostitution. Also fueling the protests was a June arrest of two foreigners on charges of sexual assault against minors. Some suggested the removal of foreigners would leave more jobs for Georgians. With the exception of a fistfight between two participants, the march was peaceful. However, several area Arabs, Iranians, and Turkish restaurants closed early after being warned of potential violence. Racist slurs were shouted at onlookers, and well-known critic Tatia Dolidze was threatened with rape on Facebook. OC Media reports that the far right is divided over this march, and especially over its leader, Sandro Bregadze, a former Georgian Dream member of parliament. For years, he was rich, corrupt Kremlin asset Ajara strongman Aslan Abashidze's chief button polisher. 2011, he was convicted of hooliganism for assaulting a gas station operator with a gun, fined 20,000 lari, and given a six-year suspended sentence. He also said on television in 2003 that Hitler got it right when he drowned homosexuals, resigned from government in 2006, claiming that he was being forced to abandon his principles regarding same-sex marriage. The idea of Bregadze with principles is just uproarious. Although Bregadze is in no way the real leader himself or a real leader of anything, he has been able to portray himself as one by, for example, rallying some established right-wing groups, including neo-Nazis, National Socialist Movement. A number of others, however, such as ultra-nationalist football hooligans, the Dynamo Ultras, did not join. The Ultras correctly accused Bregadze of being pro-Kremlin and questioned his patriotism. They are referring to Bregadze's alleged association with the Kremlin's campaign to destabilize the region through internal division. All those who joined this march are the loud nationalistic for-hire opposition, and those individuals have been for years, Jondi Bagaturia among them. Others on the right oppose the rally on grounds that Russia's occupation, not immigrants, should be the target of protest, and there was a counter-protest in the village of Bershueti, a location of last week's borderization activities by the Russian army. There was a Bershueti rally specifically welcoming foreigners to participate. The so-called March of Georgians was also criticized from the left. The event's Facebook page was a target of activism, and protesters were labeled bigoted or Nazis. Many onlookers called out criticism or reassured visitors. The NGO entitled No to Phobia released a statement condemning the event and urging the government to take action against nationalism. A counter-march was held this past Wednesday along the same street, organized by a collection of women's advocacy groups. They stated that they were marching against inequality, violence, and fascism, and were standing in solidarity with migrants. They also called for stronger sexual harassment laws and the rejection of hate speech in politics and media. A planned counter-protest by the so-called March of Georgians organizers didn't materialize. Guess they couldn't organize the funding fast enough. The event was peaceful. The rape threats to Dolidze on Facebook have been addressed by the Women's Movement of Georgia, who called on the government to stop turning a blind eye to threats of sexual violence by political groups. This time, there's been a response to a Tbilisi mayor candidate's comment. Elena Khoshtadia, running for the movement of Liberty European Georgia said that while freedom of expression is important, the threat made to Dolidze constituted a criminal offense. Kachi Kaladze, running for Otsneba, called for an end to politically motivated aggression and said that it was ironic that those marching to protect Georgian values of tolerance and respect for women would be the ones to violate them. Public defender Uchu Nanoashvili commented as well, condemning the misogyny and hate speech and calling for an efficient and effective investigation by the Ministry of Internal Affairs. Likewise, the Gender Equality Council adopted a resolution condemning the threats as unacceptable in a democratic society and praised the open investigation. The threatening Facebook post has since been deleted, and those implicated said that it was fake. OC Media reports that popular youth protests have been growing over the past year on both sides of the aisle. Last summer, week-long student protests against Tbilisi State University's financial management has led groups pushing for social equality on many fronts, including industrial labor reform in Rustavi and LGBT issues. It's good, and it's working. In general, the women's march seems to be organic and real, and marches where most of the people are men tend to be led by people paid by the Kremlin. Two high-level political visits were made this week. The first visitor was Ukraine President Petro Poroshenko. He met with Georgia's president and prime minister to sign a very important agreement, the Declaration on the Establishment of the Strategic Partnership. The declaration provides for mutual support for sovereignty and territorial integrity. This means much closer military cooperation and troop training and deployment. They also discussed stepping up security measures in the Black Sea together through NATO. It's a clear alliance against Russian interference, and President Margvelashvili's statement drew parallels to Ukraine's current crisis and the 2008 war. He said Ukraine and Georgia face common challenges and threats, both in the past and today. Poroshenko praised the participation of Georgian soldiers in the Ukraine conflict in 2014 and in current NATO operations ongoing in the country in the Black Sea. They symbolically visited three anti-Russian landmarks, the Hero Square Memorial, the Museum of Soviet Occupation, and the South Ossetian border in the village of Khurvaleti. On the economic front, Poroshenko met with business leaders, participated in a bilateral investment forum in Batumi, and discussed cooperation on large-scale international train transportation projects Viking and Zuber, which will fit in the Silk Road Trade Initiative. Poroshenko signaled that a reciprocal Georgian delegation will go to Kiev this autumn. As of Thursday, Russia has made no response to this partnership. The only rough point of the visit was over the extradition of Misha. Poroshenko stated that he was unaware of Georgia's request, which is, of course, BS. Then, when he was corrected, Poroshenko dodged commitments, saying that it was a legal issue. He only promised that Ukraine will act appropriately if criminal activities are found. Second diplomatic visitor this week was United Arab Emirates Foreign Minister Sheikh Abdullah bin Zayed Al Nahyan of the 17th on the 17th and 18th of July. He met with the President, Prime Minister, Foreign Minister, focused on trade and economic cooperation. The only two documents signed, however, were negligible. One provided legal protection for investment. The other was a diplomatic visa waiver. Tourists from Moscow was attacked on the beach in Gudauta, Abkhazia, by a group of armed people on the 11th of July. He was stabbed twice in the chest, died in the hospital. Abkhazia's Interior Ministry created a joint task force to coordinate the investigation. President Raul Khajimba said that he had taken personal responsibility for the investigation. On the 13th of July, police arrested 20 suspects in the village of Primorskoye, according to Russian news outlet RBC. Meanwhile, Russian tourists have been urged to take caution. This violence coincides with the political crisis in Abkhazia over, among other things, the enforcement of law and order. The crisis has been unfolding since the opposition held a conference on the 29th of June, calling current President Khajimba inept on a number of essential fronts, including failing to adopt a coherent economic policy, curb crime, or provide basic social support in terms of pensions and medical care, and being unwilling to take steps towards national consensus. At the conference, they issued a 10-day deadline for Khajimba to approve opposition nominees to the key government positions promised in a 2016 power-sharing agreement. Even before this deadline, however, the opposition withdrew from the 2016 agreement supporting Khajimba's government. So far, it's unclear what the opposition will do now that the deal has been revoked. Also in Abkhazia this week, residence permits are now being issued to Georgians living in the region. The permit allows documentation without full political rights. For example, Georgians can now sell and bequeath property already owned, but new property cannot be bought. South Ossetia is marking the 25th anniversary of its ceasefire agreement, prompting renewed reflection and reinterpretation of the conflict. On the 16th of July, Skeen Valley held a commemorative festival. There was a reenactment of the 92 arrival of the Russian military convoy and a parade of 70 stunt bikers along Peacekeepers Street. President Anatoly Bibulov thanked all the peacekeepers who had served in South Ossetia from 1992 to 2008 and found it symbolic that the last peacekeepers commander, Murat Kulakhmetov, is now the region's Russian ambassador. Bibulov and other regional government members visited nearby Russian military base to commemorate the fallen Russian and Ossetian dead. Kulakhmetov praised current Russian troops stationed there, calling them a guarantor of peace in the region. Alan Josoyev, leader of the Your Choice Ossetia movement, said the peacekeepers brought stability and security and prevented the elimination of South Ossetia in 1992. Keep in mind in 1992 that indeed the Georgian parliament of the day did vote to revoke the autonomous status of South Ossetia, which was the trigger for the fighting. A Russian news outlet proclaimed its 25-year peacemaking operation in South Ossetia to be one of the world's most successful in that it prevented further bloodshed and humanitarian disaster. The 2008 conflict was not remarked upon in the article. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said during the press conference that Russia will soon adopt new laws further integrating the region's law enforcement and education. Georgia media is not covering the anniversary. Last week's borderization activities near Gori were commented on by the foreign ministers from Estonia, Lithuania, Slovakia, as well as the EU Commissioner for European Neighborhood Policy and Enlargement Negotiations and press statements before the 17th of July EU Foreign Affairs Council. While the border wasn't on the meeting's agenda and all said they weren't certain of the facts of the case, each reiterated their support for Georgia's territorial integrity. The Lithuanian minister went further, cautioning Georgia to act responsibly and stating that Russia is always testing EU's vigilance on the border. Also, American Ambassador Ian Kelly visited the line of control on the 14th of July and stated he was appalled by continuing borderization and its inhuman separation of local residents and farmers. 79th Incident Prevention Response Mechanism meeting was held this week in Ergneti Village, which is near the line of control. OSCE and EUMM representatives noted a relatively higher number of detentions of local residents compared to last year. The continuing imprisonment of Georgian Georgi Gyunashvili in South Ossetia was raised but not resolved. Meanwhile, South Ossetian representatives alleged that Georgian law enforcement servicemen had briefly crossed at the end of June. An interfaith conference met in Tbilisi on the 11th of July to discuss the role of religion in the prevention of violence against women and girls. Strategies for combating domestic violence and childhood marriage were high on the agenda. The conference shared methods and made united statements disavowing violence and supporting equality in marriage. Georgia's Central Islamic Council, called the Administration of Muslims of All Georgia, was especially clear in its condemnation of female genital mutilation, stating, "No tradition or custom can justify such practice. The practice of female genital mutilation is totally inadmissible for Islam." This statement is in response to reports of such practice occurring in Muslim communities in Kvareli. Domestic violence and marriage equality has been the target of religious groups and the Georgian government since 2011, when the marriage age was raised to 18 and domestic violence became a criminal offense. Recent efforts include the creation of 11 regional interfaith unions to offer resources to victims and collaborate to prevent abuse. The government's current project is a database about domestic violence. It's being made by Geostat and should be completed by the end of this year. On a related note, the United Nations Population Fund held a masterclass on sexual and reproductive health on the 18th of July in Tbilisi. Target audience was Georgian healthcare organizations and experts, and the goal was to find new ways to implement evidence-based, cost-effective action plans which could improve sexual and reproductive health. At the masterclass, local and international experts shared best practices and ideas for future development. The class worked towards achieving United Nations Sustainable Development Goals for 2030. A Georgian, Zurab Pololikashvili, has been elected to the next Secretary General of the United Nations World Tourism Organization, UNWTO, and is awaiting confirmation at the next UN General Assembly in September. The goal of the UNWTO is to promote tourism in its member states, especially in helping these those developing in poor countries to use their natural, archaeological, and historical resources to achieve economic development. If elected, this could be very good for Georgia's tourism industry. However, the election has not come without criticism. He's been criticized for his lack of experience in the industry. He's been accused of engaging in some corrupt behavior, like vote swapping, in order to strong-arm his way into the position. 2016 U.S. counterterrorism report released this week gave Georgia good reviews. Highlights include its membership in the Global Coalition to Defeat ISIS, conviction of ISIS fighter David Boutrachashvili last August, greater intelligence sharing with the U.S., an improved legal framework for handling terrorism, well-equipped security forces, improved border security and domestic counter-extremism efforts in Panghisi, regarding control of Abkhazia and South Ossetia, and normalizing relations with Russia, were the only points noted for potential improvement. Yeah, that would that'd be great. Following up on the case of arrested actor Gyurganashvili, also known as Bakhala, he was detained in January for allegedly possessing buprenorphine, an opioid used to treat addiction. Like recently arrested rappers Birja Mafia, he also claims the drugs were planted on him. On the 13th of July, a small protest led by the drug policy activist group White Noise Movement was held for him in Dede Anna Park. They want to change the drug law that permits unwitnessed police searches. Gyurganashvili reportedly asked for and was denied a third-party witness to his search. The actor was released on bail on the 14th of July, but faces a long prison sentence if convicted. A group of 40 NGOs under the banner of the National Drug Policy Platform has developed and submitted a bill to decriminalize all drug possession. It will be heard in Parliament this autumn. A 2015 survey by the University of Lausanne for the Council of Europe found that approximately 31% of Georgia's prison population, around 2,700 people, were convicted of drug offenses more than for any other type of crime. The National Drug Policy Platform argues that treatment will be more effective than imprisonment in terms of costs and addiction prevention. Under the bill, trafficking and distribution of drugs will remain a criminal offense. The ban preventing gay men from donating blood has been ruled unconstitutional by Georgia's Constitutional Court. The Health Ministry put the ban in place in 2000, arguing that their blood carried a higher risk of HIV. Human rights activists have repeatedly challenged the ban, arguing that modern technologies allow for the detection of HIV in donations, making the ban unnecessary and discriminatory. 2014, the ban using the wording homosexual was declared unconstitutional, so the law was simply changed to ban donations from men who have sex with men, or MSM. This MSM wording is what was most recently struck down. The fourth big market fire happened this year on the 17th of July, this time Tbilisi's Dzerterebi market. 180 square meters of property were destroyed and damages have been roughly estimated at 30,000 lari. There has still been no response from the government on combating these fires. A dispute between Russia and Georgian airport regulations has resulted in the cancellation of four of the 21 weekly Georgian Airways flights to Moscow. The dispute began under the current agreement. Tbilisi Airport caps weekly flights from Moscow Airport at 21, and it refused to grant landing permission to potential Ural Airlines flights departing from Zhukovsky Airport, Moscow's second airport. Georgian authorities said the new flight would surpass the 21 flight cap, but Russia argued that they didn't count because they came from a different airport. Georgian Airways has had to cancel about 2,000 reservations and estimates millions of dollars in damages. The Russian transport minister stated that he hoped he could lift restrictions next week after negotiations persuade Georgian aviation authorities to fulfill what he sees to be its obligations. A new train link has opened up between Batumi and Ureki, a small coastal town just south of Poti. The trip takes just over an hour, will run twice daily, and cost 4 Georgian lari. Tickets can be bought on board or via any point of sale. The coastal rail line now connects several towns along the Black Sea, including Kobuleti and Chakvi. Ajarn Tourism, the development partner of Georgian Railways for the project, stated the goal is to provide local passengers and tourists cheap and eco-friendly transportation, especially during the busy tourist summer season. The final 143 new buses will be on the roads by the 20th of July. Tbilisi Mayor Dr. Normania announced these large blue buses have been replacing Tbilisi's older ones since September 2016. They run on natural gas and are more environmentally friendly than the older ones and are also wheelchair accessible. In conjunction with the release of these buses, a 6-hectare auto park opened in Didihome. The new buses auto park combined cost 34 million euro, and the EBRD provided 27 million, Eastern Energy Efficiency and Environmental Partnership the other 7 million in loans. This is a good step towards modernizing Tbilisi's public transportation, but some bus lines will still run the old yellow buses, and all over the city, marshutkas are all over the place still. Speaking of marshutkas, the Caucasus Research Resource Center, or CRC, looked into the methods of improving their safety. They first monitored drivers around Tbilisi for unsafe practices anonymously, then returned and informed the drivers they were being monitored. The results indicated that monitoring could somewhat improve safety. They observed that 96% of unaware drivers engaged in some form of dangerous driving compared to 70% of aware drivers. Likewise, 79% of unaware drivers performed illegal passes compared to 43% of aware drivers. While this was an improvement, the statistic for aware drivers is still dangerously high. Also from CRC, they conducted a survey of opinions on the EU visa liberalizations. They found two key worries. The first was about refugees. They found that 49% of Georgians believe that EU visa liberalization will lead to more refugees. 31% said they did not believe this, and 20% said they didn't know. This is a large increase compared to an early January survey, and CRC speculated that it may be due to statements from the Austrian government that refugees should be resettled in EU partnership countries like Georgia. Thanks, Austria. Second greatest worry led by 28% of the respondents was that liberalization would lead to high levels of emigration from Georgia to the EU. A travel article in the BBC drew attention to crumbling Georgian monasteries in northeastern Turkey. These were built when the Bagrationi dynasty ruled the United Kingdom of Georgia in the 12th and 13th centuries. Since the 14th century, however, these buildings have been under Turkish control. Lack of consensus, I mean, not really Turkish, but Ottoman, you know, but whatever. Lack of the consensus between Georgia and Turkey on maintaining these structures has meant the monasteries have generally remained neglected, graffitied, or in one case, used as livestock shelters. Also in travel, a new advertising campaign promoting Ajara tourism will run on BBC and Euronews. The video shows both Georgians' beaches and mountains in an attempt to increase tourism and spread the revenue to more places off the coast. And Ajara, the overall goal is to get people off the coast and into the mountains. A new 25,000 square meter shopping center off of Freedom Square, Galleria Tbilisi, announced it will be complete this autumn. The project has been financed by the Georgian Co-Investment Fund and been in construction for 2 years. The Galleria will bring brands like H&M, Calvin Klein, and Armani Exchange to Georgia. It will also contain a bowling alley, a gym, children's entertainment center, and a movie theater. On the 49th International Chemistry Olympiad in Thailand, the Georgian national team won 3 bronze medals, beating out teams from 80 other countries. These are the first medals Georgia has ever won at the event. The team members were all winners at this year's National Olympiad and are students from the Demidel College and Komarov School. Note that Demidel is the school where the Turkish guy is from, who is in the middle of extradition proceedings right now. Georgian opera singer Lado Atanelli was awarded a star in front of the Tbilisi Star Opera Theater, State Opera Theater, in recognition of his accomplished career. The baritone earned international acclaim during his 28-year career, especially noted for singing Verdi and Puccini. Short performance was given to commemorate the honor on the 17th of July. Atanelli was also recognized for his foundation, Tanagoma, which helps young singers boost their international careers. Alexander Kobaridze's debut film, feature-length film Let the Summer Never Come Again, won 2 awards at the Marseille International Film Festival this week, including the Grand Prize, the festival's premier award. The full-length feature, a joint German-Georgian production, debuted along with 15 other films. It is set in Tbilisi and adopts a fixed perspective in outdoor spaces, city streets, train stations, and markets, and follows unfinished stories taking place on its periphery. Born and educated in Tbilisi, Kobaridze has also directed a series of short films, including Looking Back is Grace and Colophon. from 2015, looking back in grace, 2014. In parliamentary news, parliamentary chair Irakli Kobakhidze condemns the Moscow visit made by the Alliance of Patriots, a populist pro-Russian opposition party currently holding six seats. He said the visit did not have the authority to represent parliament, as the ruling party's position does not allow for such visits. The alliance is, however, allowed to make private visits. They met three Russian MPs. A spokeswoman, Ada Marshani, wow, she's still around, said they discussed a new format of diplomatic talks, which would include Georgia, Russia, and NATO. The meme this week is a shot from the Wednesday's Women's March taken by photographer Ian McNaught Davis. It shows an organizer with a megaphone in front of a line of women holding banners and standing in a haze of purple smoke. More photos of both marchers are available from his website and many others. A lot of good pictures from that march. Eurasianet released a feature on Georgia's court system, accusing it of being driven more by influence than by the rule of law. It identifies a trend in decisions against foreign businesses, which influenced the Georgian chapter of the International Chamber of Commerce to raise concerns about deteriorating investment conditions at its annual meeting on the 13th of July. Included in the article's evidence is a $38 million fine against Philip Morris, dumping cigarettes that benefited and was organized, by the way, by a corrupt businessman and Shevardnadze lackey, Vanoch Kartushvili, and the last minute sale of property in Vake by Georgian Dream donor, which prevented an Egyptian investor from buying. Also accused the legal action against Georgian Manganese's mining operations to be motivated by expropriation. It's hard to know how much of these specific court decisions are legitimate controls on corporations and how much are driven by corruption. However, the hardest working NGO in the Caucus of Transparency International, Georgia, has accused Georgian courts of being controlled by clans connected to Georgian Dream party members. Most recently, they cited an informal meeting of Deputy Chair of the Legal Issues Committee, the Chairperson of the Tbilisi Appeals Court, and the Secretary of the High Council of Justice as continued evidence of improper collusion. After another long geopolitical think piece about Georgia appeared in neoconservative political magazine The American Interest by Kremlin apologist Kirk Bennett. Provides a long history of Georgia's relationship with Russia and Europe, beginning back with Georgia's medieval kingdom. It casts Georgia as a fundamentally separate entity from today's EU due to its Byzantine, Persian, and Russian influence, and sees EU and NATO membership as an unnatural shift west. The separation, he argues, is the reason why European and American partnership have been relatively slower to emerge than with the Baltic countries. Little the way the future predictions are made, although he writes that the best future is one in which Russia embraces and respects Georgia. Yeah. Thanks, Kurt. Interview between Voice of America's Anna Kalandadze and Jonas Bugjiski, a senior fellow at Washington Center for European Policy Analysis, discusses Georgia in the context of Pence's upcoming visit. His opinion is that the point of the visit is to support Georgia in this pre-impeachment period with Georgia's NATO aspirations and to send a message to Russia. His general opinion of Georgian democracy was lukewarm, criticizing attempts to alter the Constitution as a move towards autocracy, but he didn't ask specifics. He also discussed general U.S. foreign policy in the post-Soviet sphere. Foreign Policy Research Institute, an American think tank, published an analysis of Georgia's role in NATO. Specifically, it notes that despite Montenegro's ascension to NATO and Georgia's increased role in Black Sea security operations, U.S. and NATO support of Georgia has been more rhetorical than tangible. While the author does not call for full membership, he thinks Georgia should receive more funding and technical support to upgrade its military, as Russia does for its allies. All this stuff to read posted on our forum. This week's dive bar number is 990. That's the number of years water polo has been played in Georgia. This week, Temur Chikladze's documentary of Georgian water polo was presented to the Sports and Youth Issues Committee. In response, the chair of the committee pledged to help develop infrastructure of this exhausting sport. Two paintings by Russian artist Vasily Kandinsky are on tour in Tbilisi's Museum of Fine Arts. They are his 1911 painting Picture with a Circle and his 1920 work Black Dash. They will be on display until November of this year. The Art Gene Festival kicked off on the 17th of July and runs until July 24th. It's held in the Tbilisi Ethnographic Museum and has thematic evening highlighting evenings highlighting cultural folklore from various regions. There's a range of arts and traditional handicrafts. Each night ends with a musical performance. The annual GEM Electronic Music Festival continues at the Black Sea coastal town of Anaklia Ganmukhuri. It will run until the 14th of August. Tickets vary in price and can be bought online. Special buses leave Tbilisi, Batumi, and Kutaisi twice a day between Thursday and Sunday. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. That's Tango, X-Ray, Tango, Bravo, Uniform, Kilo. Our email is tpilpod, tblpod@gmail.com, or post the form on our website, www.tpilpod.com. We will finish with 1979 Fleetwood Mac. This is Tusk.